to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We rebroadcast these programs at a2zen.fm, and we archive these programs at the website richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and lots of sources and resources. We encourage you to go to our guests' websites and check out the information that they have, the materials that are available to you, so that you can glean what you can, glean what you want, what works for you, what serves you, if you will. That's really kind of the bottom line. It's like a smorgasbord, as I've often said. And bottom line is, you take what you need. Don't just embrace it 100% because it may not all fit for you. So we encourage you to check out our guests and the information that they have available for you. All right. Well, today's program is going to be focusing on health and wellness, if you will. We're going to be talking primarily, I think that the key to today's program, if you want to put it this way, this takes me back to my childhood. Today's program is brought to you by the letter C, the big C, so to speak. Because that's that is the point of, or perspective, if you will, from which my guest is coming from, because she has been through this, unfortunately, more than once, but she's doing well and she's joining us here on the program, and she has a book out and it's Surviving Cancerland. And her name is Catherine O'Keefe Canovas, and I want to welcome you to our program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here, Richard.
This is an issue that faces, I don't know what the statistics are, and I know the numbers are getting closer and closer together. It's like 1 in 5, 1 in 4, 1 in 3, or you know someone who has had cancer, even if you never have, or odds are by the time you reach a certain age, you will have had some form, even if it's a skin cancer because you've been out in the sun too long. And of course, I know that there's lots of controversy in regards to the various modalities that are out there, the more traditional orthodox forms of medicine. And I must say that, you know, I guess I'm one of those who has been exposed to it through other people. My wife, for example, went through 11 years ago this summer, was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, went through all of the treatments at that time, has been free and clear of it ever since. It then begs the question, did she really have that? Is that the only name they could give it? Scared the bejeebers out of her? Or was it really something else? And those are some of the things that we'll also talk about here on the program. But what I'd like to have you do is give us a little bit of a background as to your experiences with this disease and how it impacted you to the point where you wrote this book, Surviving. And obviously you have done more than that. And that's one of the things we're also talking about on this program, is going beyond survival to thriving. So let's talk a little bit about how this began for you.
Well, it began, obviously, with a healthy mammogram report, a healthy blood test, and a healthy physical exam. And this was, I had just turned 40, and my doctor said, you know, you're healthy, go home. And I started having tremendous nightmares. And these nightmares told me, the guides in the nightmares actually told me I had breast cancer. So my story started off with the dilemma, whom do I believe, my doctors and their indisputable tests or nightmares? And in the end, I chose to believe the nightmares, and I lived.
Okay. So did you go through all of the traditional process or protocols, if you will, Or had you seen the results of those kinds of protocols and said, I need to do something different?
No, actually, I followed the directions and the guidance of my guides in my dreams that told me that I had the cancer. And they said, return to your doctor without an appointment. And I had already gone back to my doctor four times, and all he would do was give me more mammograms, more blood tests, and more physicals, and said, you are the specimen of health. Go home. You're healthy. And finally, in the fourth dream where my guides came through, and when they come into my dreams, my regular dream will stop. And it's almost like a computer pop-up window. But it's
oh, I hate
my
those.
Dream.
No. I hate those.
And it's just as hard to get rid of them. The pop-up window won't go away. And my guides stepped through and said, come with us. We have something to tell you. And I said, look, I already know what it is. You're going to tell me that I've got breast cancer. You've already taken my hand and put it on my breast and told me exactly where it is. And I've done the same thing with my doctor, and he's not believing me. So if you want me to live, then you're going to have to do something to help me convince them, because I'm up against a rock and a hard spot, and they're not listening to me. Mm-hmm. And my guide reached into his hooded gown, he's dressed like a Franciscan monk.
Oh, okay, like into his robes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the robe with the belted, with the rope belt, yeah, and the little leather sandals. He reached into his pocket and he pulled out the rattiest looking little feather you can imagine, Richard. I mean, it looked like something you'd see on your floor in the morning in the bedroom that came out of your pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And he handed it to me and he said, if you go back to your doctor tomorrow, you and verbally fence with him as though you were an attorney and he's a judge that doesn't even like you, you will get the test you need, and you need exploratory surgery. That is the only thing that will find this. My guide actually told me that. Now, he didn't tell me in rhymes and riddles, and he didn't show me with pictures. He spoke to me in my dream, and he told me this. So I think it's also interesting at this point, Richard, to point out that he didn't say, okay, you have cancer and your doctors aren't listening to you, so I want you to go find Swami Wami Rama Lama Ding Dong. Mm-hmm. No, he didn't say that. He said, you go back to your doctors, and you tell them that you need exploratory surgery. And if you believe in this feather and you use it to fence with, you'll get the surgery you need. So now here I am going, oh, my gosh, I need to go back to my doctor who has told me I'm healthy, who I now have the reports, you know, the yellow copy, mm-hmm, the patient copy saying, you know, you are healthy. There's negative results here for any kind of cancer or abnormalities. And I have to go back and convince my doctor to cut me open and explore the inside of my breast. And anybody else would say, this girl needs, you know, she needs a padded cell,
mm-hmm,
not exploratory
exactly.
surgery. She needs drugs really badly.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I went back to my doctor, and my dilemma was, do I dare tell him about the voices in my head? Do I dare tell him about my dreams? And since I didn't have my guide say and tell him about us, I decided it was best to keep my own counsel on that. So I simply went back to my doctor, showed up without an appointment, and he said, Kathy, why are you back? And I said, because I know that I have breast cancer. I know my body, and you know me, and you know I wouldn't be showing up on your doorstep again if I didn't feel that something was really, really wrong. You need to listen to me. And he said, well, what do you want me to do? And I said, I need exploratory surgery. I want this spot that you can't feel out. And he said, well, how am I going to take something out that I can't feel, Kathy? It's against my policy to do exploratory surgery on you. It's against hospital policy. And you have to think about things like infection, anesthesia. I can't just cut you open because you want me to. And I imagined holding that feather because I knew that this was my last chance. I imagined holding that feather and pointing it at him, and I said, I have nowhere else to go. I don't know what else to do. I need for you to listen to me.
Hmm.
And so, to make a long story short, it was almost as though a vampire had walked into his office there and glimmered him. And he looked at me and he said, okay. And I thought, oh, my gosh. Did he just say okay? So he did. He performed the surgery, and pathology immediately found out that what he was not able to feel, he actually performed an MRI the day before surgery and saw that there was something on the MRI. Why he didn't choose to do an MRI until then, I have no idea. But there was something there. He went right down on top of it, and I was in stage two, and it was in my lymph nodes.
Oh, that isn't good.
No.
That's not
so
good.
So I did regular chemotherapy, and I did radiation therapy. But when it came to the chemotherapy, again, this time these were like live guides. My cousins in California told me about a Dr. Nagorny who does rational therapeutics. And as soon as pathology saw that it was cancer, because I was not having an oncologist do the surgery, because I had asked my doctor who's going to perform the surgery when he agreed to it. He said, well, I am, because you don't have cancer. You don't need a specialist there. So as soon as they saw that I did have cancer, I had to schedule immediately a second surgery to check for the lymph nodes, a cancer in the lymph nodes, and check for clear margins. And during that time that I had the first surgery and the second one was set, I called this Dr. Nagorny in Rational Therapeutics, who takes a piece of any tumor, grows it in petri dishes, bombards it with all the available chemotherapies, and finds the one chemotherapy or combination of them that kills the cancer. Rather than taking the chemotherapy and experimenting on you, because the treatment is almost as bad as the disease, the cancer treatment can kill you faster than the disease, they experiment on the cancer cells, and then they tell you which chemotherapies work. So this Dr. Nagorny called my oncologist and said, of the three choices that you gave Kathy for chemotherapy, only one of them works. The other two will not work. So if I had not done that, and I had chosen the wrong chemotherapy, which I really believe happens often, up to 30% of women who take just chemotherapy for, you know, normal breast cancer, it doesn't work.
You know what?
And it's because we're all not normal. We're all special.
Right. What really is astounding to me, both from my own personal experience of watching my wife go through the process, and by the way, I wouldn't wish chemotherapy on my worst enemy. That is some of the nastiest stuff I have ever seen go through another human being, and it's just, that is cruel and unusual punishment, and you're not even a prisoner. You're not even incarcerated in a penitentiary. That is just, there's something really wrong with that. But what I find extraordinary is the various tests, or the one test that he chose to do rather than several others. My wife, they found hers through a sonogram. They had done, I think they had done a CAT. I think they had done an MRI. I honestly don't know all of the, but what I do know is it wasn't until she persisted with getting an ultrasound that they found it. And then they finally listened to her. And it took her 6 to 9 months to get them. And she was in stage four.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. And that was my second time with stage four. It took me 4.5 months to get the MRI. And you know what? You know what really bothers me, Richard? We're not in a third world country. This is the United States. We're supposed to have the best healthcare system in the world. And yet, hospital policy dictates what a patient can and cannot have according to symptoms. And with many profound illnesses and terminal illnesses, the earlier you find that illness, the better the chances are you can come to terms with it, cure it, and move on in your life and not die. By the time a woman becomes symptomatic with many of the cancers, it's too late.
Yeah. Now, I've not had any severe issues with my health over the years, and so I've been very fortunate in that regard. But I've had experiences with people who, one in particular, when I was working back in the late 80s, early 90s, and these people were their particular religious persuasion. They wanted to lay hands on me to heal my vision. I was legally blind up until the age of 36, and I actually turned them down. because I said, that's not my purpose here. My purpose is to do the work that I'm doing. My purpose in life is not to be healed. Mm-hmm. What to you is healing?
Well, remember, our bodies are just the temporary clothing that our spirit is wearing in this earth during this time, during this lifetime. And so sometimes, you know, they say he who has sight but does not see is more blind than he who has no sight at all and sees everything. So it's a matter of perception, really. You're only sick if you feel sick or you think that you're sick. When I was diagnosed with cancer the second time, I was mad. I was mad at my guides. I was really angry. I said, okay, look, I could see, you know, maybe getting it the first time, because I was very, very depressed when my mother died. And she had died maybe 8 months earlier, and I had been the caregiver there. And it was profound for me because I was an only child. I was a military brat raised in Europe. My mother was my best friend. She was the only person I often knew when we moved to another army base, and I had no friends. So, well, her passing was very, very profound to me, and it put me into a severe depression. And I really believe that trauma and depression has a lot to do with illness. But the second time, I didn't feel that was true, and I was really angry. And so when my guides showed up in a dream one night, I just yelled at them. I said, look, you know, I want to know, and I want to know now. Why twice? I might be able to accept once, but why twice? And I want to know now, or just don't even bother speaking to me. And they kind of laughed, but, you know, I'm a redheaded Irish girl, and I do have an Irish temper. No, I'll be the first to admit it, and they you know, they know it too. And they said, you chose to do this. And I said, what? They said, before you were ever born, you wanted to come onto the earth plane, and you chose at this time in your life to go through cancer treatment twice, in order to show doctors and show the world that there are things that are greater and stronger than science, and that's your higher power, which gave science to mankind. You don't worship science. You worship the higher power. And we have gotten away from listening to our inner selves. And our inner selves have a direct phone line to our higher power that contains all the questions and all our answers. So you said you wanted to come back during a time of great change in medical communities across the world to show this. And I said, what in the world was I smoking up there? And they laughed. And they said, you wanted to do this, and here you are. And I said, well, I've changed my mind. And they said, well, you know, you really can't change your mind. Your spirit is set on this, and your body is only temporary. And we're here with you every step of the way, and we told you that before you were born. And they were with me, and I got over stage four the second time, terminal. And again, I had the chiefs of everybody at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston watching me, and they missed stage four recurrence. And all the other doctors I ever had after that looked at me and said, how could they miss that? How? Hospital policy. Hospital policy said, you have a mammogram. You have 3 years. The first 2 or 3 years, they do an MRI. After that, you just have mammograms again, whether they work the first time or not. That's mm-hmm. the policy. And until you have a symptom, they're not going to give you any other test. My symptoms were my dreams.
Mm. You know, mm-hmm. we're delving into two different worlds here, because you're talking about this world and the policies of the hospital in this reality, if you will, and at the same time listening to the inner voice, the still small voice, which we've talked about on almost every occasion on this program. And I've made this sort of guarantee to our listeners, and I really do believe this, and this has to do with the whole aspect of, again, I use the word thrive, that we're not here just to survive. We're here to thrive. And that when you listen to that voice, it will never, ever, ever steer you in the wrong direction. It may challenge you, but it will never hurt you. It will never put you into a position where you are in harm's way, as it were. It's there to guide you. It's there to protect you. It's, you know, this is all about love and joy and compassion and understanding. This isn't about fear. And so it sounds to me like you had some conditions and they were guiding you. But it sounds also like you've been listening to, not necessarily following, but listening to these voices for a long time prior to ever having been diagnosed with breast cancer even the first time.
Well, yes and no. And, you know, I really do, for the first part of what you were speaking about, I really believe that we are born with a purpose on this earth. We don't just, like, hatch and then just, you know, exist until we die.
Mm-hmm.
We come down here onto the earth plane with a purpose into our family unit, which is part of our family unit on the other side. Our great-grandparents, our great-great-great-grandparents, all of them are still on the other side. And if we think of ourselves as spirit, having a human experience on the earth plane,
mm-hmm.
and trauma and crisis is part of that experience, and getting over that trauma and crisis is part of our purpose in order to either help mankind, help ourselves, or prove part of that purpose, then it makes everything that we go through have sense.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, that purpose
yeah.
suddenly has a reason. Not just, you know, blowing in the wind where we feel like we have no control. Our control is that if we are indeed the spirit inhabiting body, then to a degree we are extraterrestrials. And if we are, to a degree, extraterrestrials, through our dreams, our inner ET is able to phone home.
Mm.
Our dreams are that phone line to the other side, where all the people in our family grouping, both on the earth plane, where our you know, brothers and sisters come into our dreams during the night, they're still alive, but we're all interconnecting through that phone line with our family on the other side in order to ensure that we, when we come to forks in the road, we choose the right path. When we're not sure that we're on the right path, if we choose the wrong path, our guides and our loved ones from the other side come into our dreams and they guide us back onto the right path. They are our GPS from the other side. You know, this recalculating, because you took a left turn instead of a right, and it comes through in your dream, and they guide you back onto the correct path.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all part of this purpose that you were talking about, this divine purpose, and the challenges and the traumas that we go through on this earth plane are for our fellow spirits to help them when they are faced with challenges, because we tend to be creatures who live vicariously through others,
mm-hmm.
and also it's a way to keep us from reinventing the wheel. You know, if we can show, as human beings, I think we're also skeptical to a degree to believe that there is anything after death. But what we seem to forget, and maybe it's part of the forgetting process when we get into the earth plane, otherwise we would all be jumping off buildings to get back there, is we forget that we were spirits to begin with. And so we have spent more time in the spirit plane than we've ever spent in the earth plane.
Hmm.
And this is just a temporary place, and our body is just our temporary outfit for this
yeah.
life. So we kind of have to take care of it, because things could get cold and we're going to need that skin to keep us warm.
Well, you take me to a place where I get into a philosophical debate over this whole aspect of at one moment we're not here, then we're born into this world and we die and we go back to the world that we were in before we came here, and the philosophical debate has to do with what the heck is the point? You know, we were all part of the one. We're going back to the one. This little detour doesn't make any sense. It's totally illogical to me. Because if we already had all of the information that was ever that was even possible to have as the omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. What do we need with these experiences? It's like if you know, I mean, that's the whole philosophical debate. But and that came to mind when you mentioned all of us coming into this world, having all of the full awareness of the previous life, jumping off of buildings, wanting to get back. And yet here we are. I mean, philosophical debate aside, we are here and we have to deal with what is here now. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with this program, is help people to get beyond the fear, beyond the angst and the feelings of uncertainty. That's where people like you come in, because you've been through these things. You've experienced them. At the same time, you said that we're all unique. We're all different. I know that. You know that. When I was going through grade school, we were taught that not only were individuals individuals, each one of us learns differently, but boys learned different than girls. The next thing I knew, after I got out of school, they were trying to normalize all of the kids so that they would all learn the same. So they put them all on drugs, put them all on Ritalin. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, but you just told me that we are all different. Why are you trying to normalize us? It doesn't work. And now we're starting to see the outcome of that. I want to find out more about your experiences with spirit, if you will. When we come back, I want to find out more about the experiences that you have had since you've gone through these two bouts of breast cancer, and maybe some of the other, we'll call them miracles, for lack of a better term. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we are going to go take a short break. We're going to talk with Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, and then we will be right back here on Tell Me Your Story. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, as we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time with this program, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. One of the reasons why we have Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, and she is the author of Surviving Cancerland. That's also the website, survivingcancerland.com. My understanding is, Kathleen, there are no rides, at least no rides you'd really want to take if you didn't have cancer in this land. This is not an amusement park.
Well, actually, it is an amusement park. That's why I called it Cancerland. It's sort of like, you know, you were talking about, why would we come back as spirit into the earth plane? For amusement, believe it or not. Imagine, Richard, if you were on the other side and everything was perfect every single day and everything was divine and there were no challenges, really, except maybe getting from one cloud to the other, but it didn't matter if you fell because you couldn't die. And then there was the opportunity to come down into the earth plane in body with spirit still connected to the other side to learn the amusement park of life on earth.
Are you saying we got bored?
Challenging.
Are you saying we got bored?
We may very well have gotten bored, and we may be the fingers of God touching the face of mankind.
Wow.
Yeah, we may have gotten bored. We might have decided, you know, what happens if we take our bodies, these bodies that break down, and try to keep them alive as long as we can. What are we trying to accomplish? It's hard to tell what we're trying to accomplish, but I can tell you one thing. Mind over matter is amazing. Our minds can actually change our bodies.
Hmm. Tell me about your level of education in this field, not of oncology in terms of dealing with cancer, but in terms of the spiritual aspects of all of this?
Well, my parents were actually, my mother was orphaned when she was very young. Her parents were sort of like Carney royalty. They were in the Barnum and Bailey Circus, and they were trapeze artists, but on the side, they were spiritualists, and they held seances and read tarot cards and all that. But when my mother's mother died, she was dropped from the trapeze. My grandfather put her in a convent, Catholic convent, and the nuns, you know, made it clear very quickly that that was not something that you ever talked about or did. And so I was raised with that same type of thought. But my mother figured out very early that I had that gift. I had that third sight or that third eye.
Mm-hmm.
When I started drawing auras around people in kindergarten. And also at around the age of two, I was hearing people speaking to me. And when I was, I remember my earliest times were when I was about 6 months old, and I was still in my crib, and I had an invisible friend named Gigi. So, you know, I can remember I was born with this knowledge, and it's something that I just never forgot. I never got rid of it. And I did try to suppress it because my mother ended up taking me to an ophthalmologist when I was in kindergarten because the principal was sure that there was something wrong with my eyes. And that was the first time I realized that doctors, with all of their extensive testing facilities and machinery, could not see what I saw, and that was auras. And trying to explain it to them would be trying to explain the beautiful pink flowers on a bush to somebody who had red-green color blindness. They're going to say, what flowers? Check her eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the experiences that I had early on in my career was just that. I was communicating with various individuals who were having these experiences that were contrary or at least outside of the realms of their belief systems, of the books that they used as their theology, their doctrine and dogma. And that they actually were forced to give up those experiences as far as talking about them, as far as acknowledging that they happened. I still remember when I was, mid-late 20s, I remember coming home with my wife at that time to my parents' house for Easter, and they were in the back bedroom in my sister's old bedroom. And they were having each of us lay down on the bed, and then the people that were standing, my mother was having them scan the body. Just mm-hmm. run their hands over the body, close their eyes, and just speak what they were feeling or experiencing. Now, when they had me lie down, I walked in. By the way, I walked into that, thinking, uh-oh, I took a wrong turn in this house. Small house, not hard to do, and I got sucked into this whole thing. But they laid me down on the bed, and my oldest sister, who was at that time of a very rigid belief system, if it isn't in the book, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
She began to run her hands across, up and down from head to toe and back to head and so forth, and found the warmest sensation when she was over my throat, which explains an awful lot as far as my career, because that's where I emanate from, if you will. Most of the energy comes from. Well, how can you argue against having that an experience if you had it? So I've always taken the position, if you say you had the experience, and I don't say this facetiously or sarcastically, I sincerely mean this, if you had the experience, who the heck am I to come along and say you didn't have it? So it's like these nuns telling you, hey, no, sorry, you know, here's the list of characteristics of the human being. What you just described isn't part of the 10. It didn't happen. You can, you know, and I'm hoping maybe you can shed some light on this, but I'm hoping that is starting to change.
Well, I think that my experience is something that the doctors now have to take up and sit up and take notice, because they actually proved themselves wrong. You know,
yeah.
They didn't know anything about my dreams. This was a double blind study. They were saying you're healthy with these three medical tests.
Right.
And I came in and said, no, I know something is wrong. Hmm. I need exploratory surgery. And that exploratory surgery proved that the three tests were wrong and the dreams were right.
And you never revealed to them
never
about any of
know.
This.
I'm gonna let him read it in the book.
Well, now, that's what I find fascinating about science, and I've used this analogy many, many times. Let's just say there are 100,000 rules to the universe. Man has discovered 10 and thinks he knows them all. The following year, he discovers 11. And says, now we know it all. It's like with this whole business with physics versus quantum physics. And I'm sitting here going, so what? You put quantum at the beginning of physics. Why does that make so much difference? Who cares? It's all, this is just the way the universe operates, and we don't know all the rules. We'll never know all the rules in this world. So
when we know all the rules, we won't be here anymore. We'll be on the other side.
Exactly, exactly. By the way, that's another one of my pet interests is transitioning, and we've done numerous programs with people who have had experiences of both near death, out of body, and those types of experiences. And when I hear of someone famous or somebody that I just happen to know, one of my first thoughts is, I wonder what they're experiencing now. What are they doing? I wish I could go there and investigate that and then come back. You know, I'm not interested in perpetuating the scenario just yet. I'm not, my transit ticket, I'm not ready to punch yet. But mm-hmm. I'm very curious. What are they doing? You know, and a couple, 3 years ago when Michael Jackson died, you know, I mean, horrible way to go, but I'm thinking, I wonder what he or it, you know, because we don't know male from female in the next world. What's happening? You know, I mean, now, I mean, obviously we have these experiences and you talk about it in the context of an amusement park. Rather interesting, I must say. Well, that must mean that we must be taking the awareness of these experiences here with us. So this individual, this entity who transitions into the next world has got to have, I mean, you say we'll know all the answers when we get to the other side, you know, but yet I'm sure they're still pondering all the experiences that they've had up to that moment and saying, wow, what did I just go through? That was pretty wild.
Yeah, I believe they do, because I have spoken with people who have passed over. That's one of the things that, you know, not that I call to them to talk to them. They seem to seek me out because I am a phone line.
Right.
And so fortunately, my guides and I work together, and they screen my calls, as it were. Otherwise, I'd never get to sleep or anything, and the phone would constantly be ringing. But I think it's interesting, for instance, a friend of my husband and I had just been married, and a very young friend of ours, early 30s, I think he was 31, passed. And he was found dead, sitting on a couch, watching TV, fully clothed, with a donut on his chest by his girlfriend. And that night, he came to me in a dream. He just walked into the dream, much like my guides do, and he left and he said, you know, Kathy, I always thought I was going to go out in a blaze, you know, in a big car accident, something that was going to be profound. I never thought that I was just going to fall asleep. And I just looked at him and I said, really? And he said, yeah, I just fell asleep. And he turned around and he walked out laughing. And so the next morning I told my husband and he said, no way. There's no way this guy just fell asleep. Something happened. It'll come out in the report when they're done.
Yeah.
And so about 2 weeks later, the report came out, and it turned out that because he had had hepatitis A and B and C, because he had worked in Africa, and he had been on drugs previously, but had gotten off of them, was completely clean. He was sitting there in front of the TV when his body literally shut down, and he just went to sleep. But the interesting thing is, a couple of weeks later, again, he showed up in my dream, but in this instance, he kept flipping in and out of different bodies. And I looked at him, and I said, his name was Jimmy, and I said, Jimmy, is that you? Why are you in different bodies? Because I recognized him by his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when I was alive, I didn't respect my body, and I didn't respect my family, and I was very closed, and I didn't talk to anyone. So now I have to borrow bodies to talk to you. And he said, and it's very, very lonely not having anybody else to speak to. And I said, well, what are you even doing here? You should be gone by now. And what was interesting is there was a cat in the room with him, a black and white cat, that was wandering around his feet and sniffing the furniture in his apartment. He was in his apartment. Somehow he had pulled me in there with him. And he had there was a guide in there, and I recognized the guide right away. So I knew that this was a guided dream, and the guide just stood in the corner, never said a word, just stood there. And he said, well, I have to stay here until my family understands me enough to let go of me. And I said, well, is there anything I can do to help? And the guide said, come with me. And he took me through a window. Again, there's that pop-up. And inside the pop-up were more guides, and they put me in a chair between two chairs. And these two guides sat across from me, and they did nothing but talk about Jimmy all night long. And at the end of the night, they said, now go and find the people that matter and tell them everything that you've heard. And so I did. I went and I said, you know, Jimmy had this black and white cat running around his feet. And the mother said, oh, my gosh, that was his first cat. He loved that cat. It was hit by a car. And then I gave them all the information down to the type of birth control he and his girlfriend used. And they were astounded.
Wow.
And they said, we had no idea Jimmy was that deep a person. I said, well, the reason he was so quiet was because he felt deeper than everybody else. His emotions were tied into everything he thought, and so he was an emotional basket case, even though he seemed like he didn't care. And so about three nights after that, the guide showed up, and I said, is Jimmy still here? And they said, he'll be here for about 90 more days, and then he'll be gone.
Did you? Now, I'm curious. I don't have a lot of time here, so actually what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give our listeners some information so that they can get a hold of you, get a hold of your materials, your book, which is Surviving Cancer Land. The website is survivingcancerland.com. And they can get in touch with you if they have further questions beyond what we are going to touch upon in this particular program. And I really encourage people to do that. You have some insights that I think people could really benefit from, and I really do appreciate the fact that you've taken time to share with us on this program a lot of your insights and also making those insights available through your book, Surviving Cancer Land. So thank you so much.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for having me on your program. This has been a real treat. I don't usually get to take off and just go into these realms like this, you know, so it's wonderful.
Well, I'm glad we were able to provide that outlet. It's something that I think is very important, and again, it's part of the reason why we have the program. I don't like reinventing the wheel either. That's why I don't have a lot of content from my guests on my site. I have links to their websites because they've already created the wheel, and so I send people to it. Again, the website is survivingcancerland.com. That is the website you can go to and get further information. And you can also, I'm sure there's an email address as well, and I'm sure that the book is also available through places like Amazon.com and so forth. And we encourage you to check those things out.
Actually, the book's not available yet because my agent actually has my book in 7 of the big publishing houses, and they're considering the book right now.
Oh.
So I didn't want to self-publish this book because I wanted to give it credence. I wanted people to look at this book and say, a real publishing company would not publish this book if she didn't have all of her medical records to back up everything she has said in here. And I do. I even have my mammography film to prove it. So I'm going the full course with this. I'm just not going to take no for an answer or be dismissed.
Well, I think that that's extremely important, that perseverance. I mean, my wife was just that. She, in spite of the fact that for 6 months she would come home from work, and she works in the medical field, and the facilities where she, her doctor was, were actually downstairs from where she worked. And so she would go down there at every opportunity to try to petition, to run the tests, she said, there's, you know, you can't tell me that it is what you're telling me it is because of the symptoms that I'm experiencing, and so on and so forth. And so it was her persistence, her perseverance, that finally got them to do the ultrasound. And you did, it sounds like, the very same thing. And it's your health. It's your body. And if you don't stand up and be counted, no one is going to stand up for you because they've exactly. got their own life. They've got their own life.
Life is a game. You know, it's part of that circus, that Ferris wheel, all of that. And you have to be involved. You can't sit on the sidelines with your fingers crossed hoping somebody else is going to make the right decision for you. You must be active in this life. You must be active in the game. You must be a player. And you don't take no for an answer. You refuse to be dismissed. And you self-advocate and be a squeaky wheel until they give you what you know you need in order to live. Because in the end, that's exactly what it is. You know, their life is going to go on. If you don't get diagnosed and you die, nobody's going to know about it. But if they diagnose you incorrectly and then you persevere and you get the correct treatments and you endeavor to thrive, then others, you can teach others how to also self-advocate and not take no for an answer.
The words.
So it's important that we live.
Yeah, absolutely, and thrive, and that's I'm finding that may very well become the new buzzword. It doesn't have the catchiness maybe of quantum or paradigms, mm-hmm. but the point is, I've kind of made this comment on a number of occasions that the life that we're living these days as a society and as a civilization globally, it's beneath us. We were created for greater things. I honestly believe that. I understand what you were saying too, of course, about, you know, we come into this world, we signed a contract, and okay, these are the experiences we're going to have. But does that mean that we don't have the choice to make adjustments and changes and choose to thrive rather than just survive?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think we do. I think that when we get to the point where we can throw up our hands to our guides and say, okay, then if you want me to thrive, give me something, help me in order to do it, because I'm up against a rock and a hard spot, and you put the ball back in their court, because remember, this is all a game, and they're part of the players too,
yeah.
They will. Absolutely, even if it's just a funky little feather. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing what that little feather could do.
Exactly, exactly right. So tell me, who is Catherine O'Keefe Canavas?
She is a self-advocate for women's rights to be all that they can be and more, no matter what it is. Actually, she's an advocate for all human rights. You know, she doesn't want people to settle for less because somebody told them they needed to.
I heard a comment from one of these political pundits, and of course they were off on their diatribe, and they were going on about the subject of abortion, which is not the direction I want to go, but it's to the point. And the comment that they made, and that you talk about, you know, we're here to thrive, we're here to speak up for ourselves and so forth. But the comment that they made was so fascinating to me. They basically said, and I paraphrase here, that if it weren't for the 50,000 or some odd abortions that we've had over the course of who knows how many years, that our economy would be doing better because we'd have more people participating and putting into the tax base. And I thought, really? Is that the only reason why we're here? Is to be consumer producers? Again, that lifestyle seems to me, from everything I've read, the great wisdom teachings, the ancient wisdom teachings, I'm sure your guides would probably confirm this as well. This is not what we were created for, but it's the wheel that we're on. And that's, you know, it's like, it seems to me like it's time to get off the wheel.
Well, I think that, you know, when I went to a psychic school down in Virginia Beach with my husband, he wanted to study channeling, which to me was controlled schizophrenia. I wanted no part of that. But I went with him, and I remember the instructor there was so wise. And she said, everybody is exactly where they need to be at the time they're there, and they can be nowhere else. So if a child is in first grade, a child cannot be in sixth grade. And a sixth grader should not disparage against a first grader. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like the person who made that statement may not have been in the upper levels of education yet. And so you just have to take when they say things like that and realize that you're speaking with a kindergartner. And you have to embrace that kindergartner and hope that they make it to the higher grades.
Let me hold you close in my arms and squeeze that silliness out of you.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Because I think about everything that I was taught as regarding life and existence from a child, that I was taught as a child growing up. That one of the things that we do as we age is that we, you know, we eat to keep the body going and keep it growing. So there's a certain sense of an evolutionary process there. We also then begin the process of educating ourselves, and that is for the purposes, of course, getting a job and again getting on the treadmill. But nonetheless, there is. The more that you are allowed to actually learn something, I mean, really learn it, not memorize, what do they call it? Rote memory, I guess it is.
Rote memory, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not learning. That is absolutely not learning because it has no meaning, you know. But anyway, you go through this evolutionary process, you experience these things, and you grow. And when I began to investigate all of the different aspects of our lives, setting the spiritual side aside, I thought, wow, look at all of the different choices in food and drink, education, people that I can experience, and on so many different levels, from, you know, off in the distance to someone very close to me who I'm intimate with, including myself. And I thought, then you pull the spiritual aspect in, and I'm told, and there's only one way as far as spiritual. I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's inconsistent. That doesn't make any sense. It's illogical.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's kind of where, you know, someone said, yeah, but you're bucking the system. I think, so what? The system needs to be bucked. It needs to be changed. It's not working. It's part of the reason for this program. We're trying to say, look, the system is broken. I don't want to fix the system. I want to start over. And it is possible. Who said that the way that things are is the way that they always have to be? Isn't everything temporary?
Oh, it's always in flux.
Yeah.
You can never go back to the moment you just spent. It's
exactly.
Gone.
Exactly. So I find it, I just find that kind of a, I'm learning. I'm getting better at it, Kathleen. I'm learning to laugh more at these kinds of things instead of taking, oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that. Instead of just
my guides laugh at them all the time.
Yeah, I need to start doing that. I need to talk to your guides.
Laughter is so powerful. It's got an incredible power to it. And you know, you have to also remember that these rules are meant to control people. And many of them, even dealing with religion and spirituality as well, you can get into spiritual groups where you have to. Think according to their rules, and it's to control you. Mm-hmm. And when you control a person, you're not allowing them to expand. But they're afraid that if you do expand, you'll no longer need them.
Yeah.
And that's the real catch right there. They need to be needed, which tells me when somebody's that needy, is what they really need to do is go back to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So you've always got to be careful with real needy people. But then also there's a group of people, and I'm sure you've met them too, and I call them, you know, the sheep mentality.
Yeah.
They're so afraid, they're fear-based in everything that they do, that they're afraid that if they make a decision, it will be the wrong one, so they want somebody else to decide for them. And those people that they choose to follow make all their decisions for them, so then they're sure that they'll never make the wrong decision. And I've been told that by these people, and I said, well, what are you going to do when you go before God? And he says, why did you do this? And what are you going to say? Because he told me to? Do you think God's going to accept that?
Yeah.
Well, and that usually throws them for a loop or two.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Before we go, let me ask you one final question. What do you hope to or want to achieve with the work you're doing?
Well, I, I hope to achieve harmony in hospitals and the medical community so that they will embrace rather than ignore the spiritual aspects of healing. When they are dealing with the body, they're only dealing with the outside, a very small section of that whole individual. And they need to embrace the spirit. And in order to do that, doctors must listen to their patients. They must. You cannot hook them up to a computer like a car to see if their battery is run down. You must listen to the patient. Because the patient knows, our bodies have been speaking to us since the beginning of time. And the doctors of yore used to ask the patient, tell me what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're feeling. They don't do that anymore.
No.
They walk in with your chart and they say, your blood test says you're healthy. Go home.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's the end of that.
Yeah. Well,
so we need to go back to the future.
Nice turn of a phrase there. Thank you so much for being on the program, sharing your story and your insights. And we encourage people, when the book is available, to get a copy of Surviving Cancerland. The website is available, survivingcancerland.com. You have a lot of resources there. I believe did I see correctly, there's a blog?
Yes, there is a blog on there. It's at the top of the webpage, and at the bottom of the webpage in the left-hand corner, you'll see my Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn pages. Please join me on them. My profile Facebook page with my name on it, Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis, is maxed out. But the second networking page, which is Surviving Cancerland, all capital letters,
mm-hmm.
that page links to all the other pages. It links to my 26,000 friends.
Wow.
And so anything you post on that page, if it's something that will help another individual, I will immediately share it.
I do find that fascinating that Facebook only allows you to have so many friends. And then
isn't that weird?
And then they cut you off. I'm going, excuse me?
I
don't know 25,597 of them, and you're not going to let me have any more that I don't know? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It is kind of silly. It's like... when they were all worried about Y2K and all of that stuff, I remember hearing a story of a woman back in the 50s who was actually asked the question about the computers that they were developing and that they would morph into over the decades. Well, what are we going to do when we get to 1999 and we flip over to 2000? She says, nothing. What's your problem? It will just flip over to 2000. It's exactly what it did. Nothing calamitous happened. Well, again, I thank you so much for joining us and sharing this time with us, and look forward to talking with you again in the very near future.
Oh, thank you, Richard. It's been a real pleasure, and I enjoyed our time together here.
Great. I'm Richard Dugan. Again, my guest has been Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis, and again, the book, when it is available, is Surviving Cancerland, the website survivingcancerland.com. Until next Saturday at this same time, I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story, Love Talal.